to the Lately in PHP podcast. This is episode 29, and this time we have a special guest, lowercase d, or shall I say special k?
You can say whatever you want. Good morning.
Hello, Michael Kimsoll, the yes. One and only.
Yeah, there's our actually favorite. Two of us.
Really?
There's two of us, yes.
Your
Michael
son?
Kimsoll, I mean. Whoa.
No.
Well, that broke. Okay.
Well, so, hello, Michael. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm fine with my mic falling down.
Right. Was that a consequence of the Hurricane Sandy?
No, no. She blew on by without much ado here. It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Pretty bad up in New York. I got a little family up there, and my wife's actually up in Philadelphia as we speak, but the area that she was in did not get terribly affected. They had power and gas and all that. So
this year it did not pass in your state?
We got a bit of rain. It hit the state, but just on the coast, which is...
Far?
I can't think right now. But it's a few... I'm in the middle of the state, so I'm probably 3 hours from the coast.
Yeah.
So we just got a lot of wind and rain and grayness.
Well, that's great because it was useful as you were able to fill in for Hernani that is still having problems with his internet connection.
We miss you, Hernani.
Yeah, he's fighting his ISP.
You?
Miss you. Probably Saudad.
Saudad.
Saudad. It's plural.
Saudad.
Well, Saudad. Never mind.
Okay. Only one dad, but he could have two dads. That's okay. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's great to have you because you always have been a PHP program. And you
get that all the time.
You will be able to comment on many topics that we will be covering this episode. Well, I think we can start from PHP 5.4.8. It was released like
a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah. 18. Yeah, we are recording this a bit delayed, and it was released along with. PHP 5.3.18, there is always this pair of releases since a few releases ago. And, I do not see many relevant things here except for bugs. There is nothing that was broken, I hope, in terms or at least major fixes that were important to comment. Michael...
Yes.
Have you been using PHP 5.4?
Every day, like even in my sleep, I'm using it.
Yeah.
Yes, I really upgraded just about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago to 5. I had a virtual machine that I'd put 5.4 on just to mess with it, but I hadn't done anything production on it. I switched the servers that I'm managing. I upgraded to 5.4, and all my code, I didn't run any benchmarks. Supposedly some of it's a lot faster. I haven't run it through any paces. But the one thing that I have started to do a lot just in the past few weeks is using the short array syntax.
Yeah.
I wish it could be shorter. But you take what you can get. Seriously, I wish it could be shorter. But you take what you can get, and it's a good, it's nice.
Yeah, so it's like you save typing the word array.
Yep.
And just put the brackets.
Yep.
How does that feel? Are you much more productive?
Oh, it's heaven. It's like the pearly gates are just coming through my fingers there.
Yeah.
That's a horrible analogy, but it's still fun and good. It's I enjoy it.
No, it's more confusing because you. You don't know if that is a bracketed expression or is it really an array.
No. What would a bracketed expression be? I've
like
never seen.
Grouping.
But you don't.
Mathematic.
You don't do the square brackets for that.
Yeah.
It's square brackets.
Oh, it's square brackets. For some reason, I thought that it was the round brackets.
Nope.
Well, anyway, other than that, did you notice any differences worth the worries of those that are afraid to upgrade?
I didn't, no. Again, the speed is supposedly a lot faster for some things. I haven't benchmarked it, but I certainly didn't notice any problems going to, I think, I don't know if I was on 5.3 13 or something, and I got a new repo on my, a couple Linux servers, and went up to 5.4 something. I don't know, 5.4. Yeah. What's the latest on 5.48? I'm probably on 5.45 or 5.46 or something. Whatever. It was a few weeks ago. So I like it. I haven't gone overboard doing much 5.4 specific stuff other than the short array syntax, but that's enough for me. Now yeah, all my code is 5.4. I can't go back.
Until you realize, oh, there is this extension missing. Do you use any PHP code cache extensions?
I have on some projects. I'm managing a few servers. I don't remember offhand if any of them have any sort of a code cache. I don't think any of them do right now. It's something that we'll probably in the next few months need to put on. And the one that I'm thinking, there was one server I'm thinking of, was moved to 5.4, but there's no 5.4 code running on it. There's no PHP code on that machine that's running PHP, that's running 5.4. So if we have to go back to 5.3, we could. So
yeah. Well, the extensions are available, at least. I think we talked about it in a previous episode. There is the PHP, it was changed the name. It's eAccelerator. I think the latest version already runs on PHP 5.4. APC, there is this all is eternal struggle whether APC is ready to be shipped with PHP or not. Yeah. Whether it will bother somebody or not. And so I think the way things are going, APC will never be ready for whatever version of PHP is, because there is always an objection to put it in the distribution. Well, it's anyway, like you can
PHP
always...
PHP is objection-oriented, it seems, not object-oriented. Yes, you can use that. I need to go turn on my light, so keep talking, but I'm going to take my ears off.
Yeah. Well, about PHP 5.4, another thing that we also mentioned in the previous episode is regarding this...
I can't hear you. Who are you going to call? Ghostbuster! Oh, I can hear you now. Hi.
Now we are back to the 80s.
It was a little before your time.
Well, I was saying, maybe not. Not that so much before. anyway, I was saying that about PHP 5.4, the greatest improvement is actually the access to objects. As long as you declare all the variables in the object, it will use it will no longer use a hash table. It will use a sort of fixed array of methods, variable names. So it will be much faster to access, to determine where is the value of the variable. Or to store that variable. But for you to notice that in practice, you would have to do a lot of variable access in the same class, in the same script. So in practice, you probably will not notice much this difference.
Yeah. There's a few things that I've done over the years where when I've used for an accelerator, for example, or there's been some patch to PHP that has said, well, this makes everything a lot faster. A lot of times I haven't noticed that much faster, and I think it's just because I tend to write kind of minimal code. Maybe I'm using some large framework sometimes, but the code I write tends to be, if not optimized, I won't say I'm always great enough to make super optimized code, but when the APC and the Zen code cache and stuff came out, people were saying, oh, we're getting 300% improvement and 500% improvement. That must have meant that your code was really, 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 really bad in the first place, I think.
Well, the cache is more for large portions of code. If you have many classes being used in the same script, loading all of them will take, and compile them, because they become compiled in memory, will take a lot of time. And if you do not use a cache, there is this overhead on each request that a cache would avoid. That's the advantage. But you're probably right that you will only notice that more in a busy production server.
Yeah.
So if you the code itself will not run faster if you use a caching extension. Maybe except if you also enable optimization options that will somehow rearrange the compiled code.
Yeah.
But even those are probably not very much noticeable, because what PHP scripts tend to do most of the time is do I/O access, like databases, files, and most of the time the script is not doing anything except for waiting for the database to return the results. And when you are waiting, you cannot wait faster if it depends on something else, like a database server or your file system. So that is why sometimes all these arguments of performance of code are
silly.
I think you put it to the right, the best word to describe it. People like to, I think there is this macho developer thing, like, I am faster than you. Well, I earned four CPU cycles and I'm the best, although nobody notices those CPU cycles. Well, and anyway, for people that are passionate about these performance topics, it's always interesting to know exactly what you gain or not with these enhancements. Moving on to the next topic. One thing that I wanted to comment, including in the section on which we comment about stuff like proposals for the upcoming PHP versions, there was this proposal of a new feature. Well, I'm trying to increase the font here. Well, probably increasing it will not even make you read it in the video. But anyway, there is this proposal by Nikita. I forgot his last name. I'm not sure if it is Popov or something.
Just says Nikita.
Well, in the message,
in
yes.
The door. Yeah.
Well, anyway, the proposal is to implement the so-called generics in PHP. Michael, are you familiar with this generics thing?
I have to say, even though I do some Java work, I'm not really familiar with it. I remember a few years ago, Java 5 had generics. It was a big deal. And I'm reading the description right now. If I want to validate all insertions, I would need to create a comment collection class, extended from collection, override all the methods dealing with adding new elements or collection. I can't have any hints from my ID about what type of collection, so I have to have code like for each comment. But there'll be no collection T implement traversable.
Well, this is our basically templates of code. That's what generics are all about.
Yeah.
Templates, it's the name they gave it in C++, if I'm not mistaken, because I confess I never used this in anything like this in any language. Basically, what you can do is you define a template here, and there are some template marks like this T thing. Then this T thing gets replaced in other places, if I'm interpreting this correctly, and there are a sort of placeholders. Well, if you work with templates in PHP, these are not exactly templates of output of your pages, but are rather templates of the definition of your classes. So with one template, you can define classes for different types of similar objects, but they are not the same. You can have, for instance, I think it's collection of something. You could have collections of comments. So you define a template like this, and then you create a collection of comments like this, and this comment gets replaced on this T.
Yeah.
And
I see it here now. Odd, because I've seen this in Java, but I've never seen it in an explanatory way. And that said, I've never actually looked for it either. And it could just be that when I'm using Java, I'm generally using Groovy, which is a dynamic language anyway, and there's usually not that much of this sort of stuff that I would need to do. So
Groovy supports generics too?
It does because it supports Java.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, it is effectively Java. It will compile down. It has the same syntax. So anything the JDK supports, Groovy supports. But it's not been something that I've been doing Groovy for 4 years, and it's never something that I've had to do. Some of the libraries in my frameworks, in my Java frameworks, might be using that. And you know, if it was in the language, I'm sure it would probably get it used a lot in some of the major frameworks. But does somebody, you know, will this change the way a lot of people write their PHP? Even if this was implemented, it would probably be years before that had any substantive effect.
Well, so, from discussion that happened in the internals mailing list, let me see if I can show you the. There are quite a few topics, like comments, like about 20, and well, from what I understood, this is not very well accepted proposal. Actually, it was even interesting that the first comment that appeared is one from Rasmus Lerdorf, like saying, "We don't want this stuff in PHP." Well,
oh, I didn't see that.
I don't
was
know
Rasmus.
What. Yeah. Well, Rasmus is a quite straightforward person. He does not spend much time detailing his comments. He said, "Personally, I would hate to see this anywhere near PHP." So,
yeah,
it's practically a nail in the coffin of the proposal. Anyway, obviously, it's not just Rasmus that matters. Although it would be interesting to learn why he was opposing to the idea. I think he did not comment anymore in the whole thread. Just said that and. Do you think a proposal like this would have any interest in PHP?
Me personally,
I
don't have much interest in seeing it. There's many other things that I would prefer to see. And I should probably shut up and put my money where my mouth is. I had actually started an RFC a few years ago, and I didn't touch it in about a year, and it looks like it was deleted from the wiki. But to me, there's other things that we could add to the language or modify the language that would give a bigger benefit to more people. It's not that there's absolutely no use cases for generics at all. It does seem to fly in the face of what is still effectively a more dynamically typed, loose sort of language. But if it was there, would I use it? Probably not.
Yeah. Well,
I don't use GoTo.
If you said that even in Java or Groovy do not use generics, why would you use them in PHP, right?
Yeah. I think there's specifically in Groovy, people would probably more likely, if they wanted to use the Groovy language, they would probably do metaprogramming more than adding, having strong metaprogramming capabilities in the language itself would be far more preferable. If we were only going to have one thing, I'd prefer dynamic metaprogramming over adding generics, for example.
Yeah. Well, somehow this generics is also metaprogramming, but the question is, will this ever be useful to anybody? Because the way I see it, what generics would allow for you to reduce some code by having avoiding some boilerplate, repeating some templates of code, having to type them yourself by defining a master template of collections, of comments, collections, of posts, collections, and something else. Like in this example, not that generics are just about collections. What you can do with generics, I think you can already do somehow with interfaces and also now with traits, because you can use parts of code from.
I was really sincerely wondering if, and again, I'm not an expert enough of this to speak authoritatively, but would traits have any? Would they play any part in making this easier to do, solving some of Nikita's problems in the first place?
Well, traits is just a way to reuse chunks of code defined somewhere that perform a task that you see as a pattern being repeated in different places, or else traits will not be a source of reuse. If you don't use it at least more than once, why would you define some code there? And somehow the same goes for interfaces, because interfaces define, although interfaces are morphed to define APIs, not exactly implementing them, defining the code. You can also do that, but structures in a language could be used or not by the developers. But in my opinion, people have more simpler needs than these sophisticated things, generics, templates. I mean, that is what they are called in C++. And now traits, I also have a hard time figuring many people that would use traits. Although in PHP classes, there are already a few packages that people send traits to define for some purpose. I do not recall exactly what it was, but it was recent. Well, there will always be people that find uses for this, but I think that the vast majority of the developers will not find great use for this.
Can I show you what I would prefer to see? And this kind of gets into your other, you know, your sort of class access and the debate and stuff. But if I share some code in the group chat, does that get recorded?
No.
Okay.
You would have to screen share it because
I'll screen share.
Video.
It's all on, that's. Can you see that? I'm gonna make this a bit smaller.
Yeah, if you can.
Yeah, can you see that?
Well, I can see it. I'm not sure if in the recording it will be visible.
Enough. I'll make the font bigger. Is that better?
Yeah, it's improving.
Okay, I'll make it even bigger.
Can you add a few lines on the top because Google is putting their Google Plus logo over the your code. Yeah, that's better now.
Yeah, I would love that.
What would be?
I would love to be able to add a method onto an object like that.
Say it's a function.
So it's
when you assign.
That's what I want to be able to do.
Do you want to explain it?
Well, I've got an anonymous function here, a closure, say. So if I just say, hi there, and die, I should be able to, So if I, say itself is an anonymous function, or closure, whatever you want to call it. I've got a class here called user. I'm going to make a new user. I'd like to be able to add on to this particular instance of user and say that say is a function. Or you know, is a closure, and then let me invoke it.
Okay, so when you mean dynamically add functions to a class
or an object, either an entire class definition that would be something. That would be something too to be able to say something like either one of those would make my year in PHP.
I was wondering if that isn't already possible somehow.
No. Certainly, this code is not.
Well, that's right. Probably not with that syntax.
I've not seen a way to...
With all these closure things.
Now, I bet I could do this directly. I bet I could do this directly. Hold on. You say... No, even that doesn't work.
What was that? Say is a function...
So not even trying to make it a reusable closure, just saying...
Just like you do it in JavaScript, right?
Yeah, or Groovy. Mm. So somehow I can just make that into a variable, and I can invoke the variable, but I can't just assign that to a property and then invoke the or member variable, I should say, not property. I can't put that in a member variable and have that work. So anyway, that's kind of off topic, but to me... I have loads of use cases for that. That would make my life a lot easier, and I think it would open up a lot more. That's the sort of metaprogramming I'm talking about. Let's dynamically be able to modify classes or particular objects at runtime and add our own.
So what would be your compelling use case for that? How do you use that in practice?
Well, it would let me make sure that anything that I wanted to do, if I whatever I want to do with an object, I can do, even if I don't have access to the source code, or even if I can't modify the code ahead of time. But my that say method, in one case, I might want to pass it a closure that also does logging. But in other cases, I don't want it to do that, or I want to pass it this. I want to have two or three different closures based on the type of request that it is, and say my user does this.
You are replacing a variable with a function, right?
Well, I'm not replacing anything. There isn't anything right now.
Oh, okay.
But let's say that there was a function called say already. that did something. Let me replace it with something else at runtime.
Yeah, I see what you mean. You want to override the functionality of a class, but just for this specific object.
Well, either for that specific object or maybe for all of them, but I don't want to go change the code, or I can't go change the code. Somebody's just giving me bytecode. That's all I have. I have cached stuff. I can't do it. Let me dynamically modify this at runtime, and we can't do that.
You want to have the prototype functionality.
But we can do it in JavaScript, we can do it in Ruby, we could do it in Groovy, we could do it in pretty much every other language.
This is possible, but probably not with this syntax.
I don't think it's possible at all. But I guess what I'm getting at is it's a philosophical divide. I would like to see PHP as a dynamic language continue to embrace more of the dynamic things from other dynamic languages. And the idea of what the generics is doing is saying, let's try to import or take the culture of the statically typed languages more so than the dynamic stuff.
Yeah,
so I see that's what you mean. Anyway, I'll stop sharing that.
More flexible. Well, this probably ties with the next topic on
exactly
which we're coming another proposal. Let me screen share it here, which is a proposal by Clint Priest, Sir RFC. That was widely discussed in the PHP internals, property accessors for syntax. He wants to have a different syntax to define setters and getters for certain variables. Basically, what it defines is a variable here, in this case named hours, that if you want to get its value, you would define a function to get its value. And if you want to change its value, it would be a different function.
I thought this was already decided. I thought this had gone through the RFC process and it was already going to be implemented in PHP 5.4 or 5.5.
I do not see the vote here.
See, saw this about a year. Actually, it was the beginning of the year on Reddit. I saw Clint Priest wrote, and he said, "Oh, you know, I got this through, and this is going to be in the next version of PHP."
Yes, this is the initial version that is mentioned here is of December
last year,
2011. So the discussion appeared again in the PHP internals, several iterations, and I'm not sure. I did not follow the whole discussion because it was quite long, but I did not see much reason, compelling reason for this. Do you see any great purpose for this?
Well, having I think there's a lot of purpose for it. I really do not like this style syntax. This is C# style. I like C#, and I think it works for them. I don't like this. Primarily, this is just an emotional thing, but I'll screen share with you. I started a very basic RFC on the wiki probably 3 years ago, and then I let it fall away, and I think it's been deleted. And I've had a couple discussions on Reddit with people about this, and you know, people hate my suggestion, but I'll show you my suggestion.
Okay.
Here it is.
It's a surprise.
That's it.
It's a nice convention.
I'm in love with Groovy, and maybe not love is too strong a word, but I'm an enthusiast. I use it a lot, and much like some people are C# people and they want to see C# syntax in PHP, to me Groovy is Groovy and is a better Java, and PHP has largely been inspired by Java. Let's continue that road, but let's take not just from Java the language, let's take from some good ideas in Java. What happens? Yeah. And this is probably the one big difference between PHP and Groovy. You can in Groovy and Java, you can say this is public, but by default, what Groovy actually does is makes everything private. It makes all your properties or your member variables, makes them all private, and makes public get and set methods for everything. So effectively, if I was to say u equals new user and I say echo u name, what Groovy is doing under the hood is actually translating that to you get name. It will have at compile time, it will create a basic get name and set name. But if you have your own, if you have an explicitly declared get name or set name, that will be run instead. So effectively, you can just say you name. So I could just write that, but if I have a get name, if I have an explicit get name method available, that will run. Otherwise, the a default get name method would run, which would just return the name property. So you can, most of the time, you could write code just like that. You don't need to ever write getters or setters, and you'll get default behavior. When you want to override them, you can write methods that conform to the standard method naming and processing that we already have in PHP. These would be methods that would be testable on their own.
Yeah.
And you don't have to change your code at all. But instead, if you go back to share your screen as to what this RFC is proposing, is a pretty invasive change to adding get and set. To me, that's very polluting, that idea of get. All the examples there are just get. Well, just return something divided by something. Just return something divided by something. I've still not seen a good way of how you would actually test that. And what if you have more than two lines of logic that you want to have in a getter or a setter, like logging or something like that? What you're going to end up doing is in that get, you're going to end up calling another method probably. So
right.
Why not just have something that looks for those methods by convention name anyway?
I think this can span more than one line. It was just the
example. No, it could. It could, but do you really want to have, like, in my class definition, I've got a public hours, and there's nine lines of getter and setter code in there, and then I've got another property with another 9 or 10 lines or 3 lines of code.
Yeah.
It gets really ugly, and you are really combining your sort of architectural definition with functional code right there. I've not seen good examples of how you'd test this. Yes, there's some RFC discussion about inheritance and things like that, but we have standard ways of defining get and set. People have classic getter and setters already. Why not look at making the parser and the runtime just call them automatically based on context?
Yeah.
Well, and if you don't need them, then you don't need them. Anybody that actually already has a bunch of explicit get set calls, that, like I have echo, you arrow get name, get age, get all that. If you already have custom getter and setters written and you're calling them with get and set methods, nothing would change. If you just have your own, if you just have public and protected properties and you're just calling them directly, nothing would change. When you want to add getter and setter code, you could add it in, and it's not invasive to the. It's adding additional methods. It's not invasive syntax in the property definitions that you already have. I'm rambling. I'm really hot under the collar about this, but I didn't bother commenting on this because my understanding was that this had already passed 9 months ago, 10 months ago. So,
well, I may be wrong, but
it looks like it has not.
It says ready for review and discussion, code complete.
Yeah.
Well, so it seems like that the vote did not even start. If this is already a final, because this is a quite long proposal.
Yeah.
And this reminds me about the whole bureaucratic spirit of Java, which
something right there, like about 2/3 of the way in the syntax, there's something that says read only and write only properties. Just the syntax for this looks really ugly on the right hand side there below operators.
Okay.
There's now a keyword that's read dash only. That is really un-PHP looking, but seriously.
Yeah.
But that idea, how you would make something read only in Groovy, for example, is that you would just, if you wanted a property to be read only, you would create a setter that does nothing. So if somebody called set on it, nothing happens. If you call the set, you could throw an exception in there if you really wanted to be a jerk about it. But there are already conventions. We don't need new keywords with dashes in them that say read only and write only or whatever. Yeah. This is a lot of cruft. And I know it's very easy for me to sit here in my chair and just, I'm an armchair person. I have a better idea, and whenever I discuss it with people, it gets shot down. But and I know that Clint and some of the other people here have put a lot of time into this. I know they believe in it. I just think it's wrong. I think it's going to, if this was adopted, it's going to lead to a lot of problems.
The basic question is what problem this solves is to not have to call getters and setters and just assign properties and have the getters and the setters be called implicitly like you mm-hmm. said it is done in Groovy, or is it something else that I'm not
I think that's primarily it. It's just, it's in theory, being able to write cleaner code that the nicety, I will say, in Groovy is I don't have to call a getter. The getter is there for me. There's actually, in the bytecode, there's always a getter, there's always a setter, and I can override it if I want to. So I never have to think about, do I call a getter, do I call a setter? I can just say u.name or user.name. And when I want to change the behavior of that, I want to log something. Yeah. I want to capture it for audit. I want to do some runtime checking or some sanity checking. I have a standard way to do that, which does not mean that I have to go back and edit any of my code. Yeah. And actually kind of gets into your next debate topic there. If you were to write all of your code with explicit getters and setters all the time, then that idea of any sort of a property accessor proposal is moot. I don't know many people that write everything as getters and setters, nor should we have to. Computers can do more for us now.
Right. Well, that's exactly... basically, you're already debating what I planned next for this podcast. Originally, I thought this discussion would happen with Hernani, because Hernani's day job is with Java. He works for IBM, and liking or not, he has to develop most his code there in Java. And in Java, there's this culture that every property has to be accessed via getters and setters. If the language allows you to assign variables directly, why do you have this rule to develop getters and setters? Yeah. Why go through all the pain of writing the code for getters and setters, especially when all the properties you want to write getters and setters are public, and the default is always to assign the value passed to the variable for a setter, and the default for a getter just to return the value of a variable. If you can assign or get the values of the variables directly, why do you need to go through the pain of writing getters and setters? Well, there are reasons why getters and setters are necessary, like if you want to implement a complex logic that validates the values that are passed, or for some reason the getter needs to call some code elsewhere, probably in a remote machine, or calling a web service. That in that case, it would make sense to write getters and setters. But when your case is just a public variable that could be accessed externally, why bother to write the getter and setter code?
The more culturally in the Java world, I'm sort of speaking as a Java person here, I think the argument would be that nothing should be public. You should never have direct access to it. You should never be able to modify the state of anything directly. Everything should always be done through method calls. So I want to, what's this user's name? Get name. It's not doing anything other than passing you through an internal private or protected property, but that's it. And so it enforces that concept of you're never actually doing anything directly. You're always indirectly going through stuff, and it's why I like Groovy to the extent that I do, because it enforces that. It provides you that structure automatically at the bytecode level. It's private. It automatically creates me a get name and it calls it. But it looks to me like I'm just saying user.name. Very, very. I get the benefit of simple to read code, but I get the architectural benefit of being able to override and put custom code in without modifying my existing code later. Go ahead.
My question is, if there is that rule in the Java world, why it was not built in the language
like Groovy?
There are no direct. There's no. It's the opposite. It's if in the Java world you should always write getters and setters. Why isn't that a rule in the language that totally forbids the syntax of assigning a variable directly from outside of the class and getting its value?
I suspect the real answer is that no one really thought that it would be the number one language on the planet for a decade or more. arguably, yes, C and C sharp and whatever, but I don't think that people really thought that it would get as popular as it did, as quickly as it did, and that so many of these architectural questions would be haunting us 15 to 20 years later. Because there are a load of people that would want it to be like you're saying, which is, that you should never have access to something, and we should prevent this from even being allowed in the code in the first place.
Right. Well, the way I see it, it's probably not that everybody agrees with that rules of making all with setters and getters.
Right.
My main reason to be against getters and setters is that you forces yourself to write silly repetitive code that the only thing that it does is to assign the variable or get the variable value. But I like the approach that you mentioned in Groovy, which is all variables by default have implicit getters and setters, which are public. And if you want to change that for a specific variable, you just write the code,
get names.
That would be perfect, I think, because if you really need to make something a variable only be accessed by getters and setters, it would be your exception, not your rule. So you don't have to go through the pain of writing silly getters and setters that do the very same thing for all the variables. If you have 20 variables in a class, imagine writing the code for 20
getters and
setters.
But my IDE writes it for me. But my IDE just generates it for me.
It's silly code. It's more code to compile. It's more code to waste memory. Why do not make it built in the language?
You don't understand enterprise development.
Enterprise.
You just write your PHP. That's all right. Okay. You go ahead. Do your little script. Just write your script.
I'm not Spock.
You could write a script in PHP,
and
that'll be happy.
I'm a lame PHP programmer.
Yeah. Oh, you could put it on the web, and that'll be fun. But you don't understand enterprise, capital E.
It's superior.
Enterprise! Why don't you understand that?
Enterprise, that. You are a Klingon. You do not understand Spock. You understand Klingons. You are from the evil. Spock
I used to get that all the,
right.
the time. Yes. Yeah. And now I was a PHP guy
what
selling
that,
into the Java
that
world.
Thing with the,
yeah.
What is that thing?
I told
with
you.
The,
it's this. Yes.
Yes, you told me. I was not even aware of that.
Okay.
Well, all this to say that. It's a nail that I enjoy eating in the forehead of the Java developers. They are bureaucratic, complicated. They deserve to get buried in their piles of useless, repetitive code forever, and not be as productive because the world is from the WordPresses.
As a matter of fact,
WordPress is and the cats, of course.
That's where I was today. I was at WordCamp. In Raleigh, I was at a WordPress day and a half WordPress conference. And
let me guess, it's totally crowded. Right?
There was, you know, I think there was close to 200 people there.
Because of the hurricane, it would be
no. Interesting though that it was there was a mix, but it's such a wide community. There was a big cross section of people there, and. I'll tell you more about it later. But not that people don't go to Java conventions, but there aren't that many sorts of public-facing Java applications that are so widely and enthusiastically adopted. Still, 15 years, 17 years after the language has come out, it has its place, and I use it for a lot of stuff, but PHP still dominates, and it will for a long time.
Right, because it's a pragmatic language. Well, this is just to end this topic because you need to move on. But my point is just that the PHP world is much more pragmatic. And for me, it does not make much sense to copy all these things from the Java world when in the end we are not going to use them. All these generics, all these getters and setters that are a forced rule to make programming less fun, I think, and less productive. You get stuck on writing silly code. Of course, your IDE can do it, but I think it would be needless. Anyway, moving on with the podcast, I wanted to just comment briefly on an article that I have published recently. It was about a class that I wrote to provide access to all APIs that require OAuth authentication. For those that are not familiar with OAuth, it's just a protocol that allows you to your application to request to access some API on behalf of the users of your site. And the reason why I'm mentioning it here, since it is for a specific class, is because there is this feature on the PHP Classes blog that you can write about some class and request your article to be featured, and it becomes featured in PHP Classes site blog, and you get much more exposure to your article, your classes, and so. So this is also an invitation for every developer that has written classes, would like to write articles, as long as your article is of interest, not just of your class users, everybody. You need to teach something there. Hopefully present some code that teaches people how to do something, even if it requires to use your class. And in this article, I explained that despite all the complication of the OAuth protocol to obtain tokens and assign parameters to make API calls and all this complication, this class was meant to abstract all the versions of OAuth since OAuth 1.0, 1.0a, and 2.0. Different APIs on the internet use this class. OAuth, different versions of the protocol, and this class abstracts it. And the class has built-in support to assign some variables that define URLs to communicate with some different OAuth servers. And in the end, you can write the same code to access different OAuth servers, and it will simplify your life a lot. I've developed this class to implement certain things, not only to post on Facebook and Twitter, but also to provide means to authenticate. When you access the PHP Classes site or JS Classes site, you can authenticate, log in with your account at Facebook or Yahoo or Google or Hotmail or several other sites, and at least part of that authentication is using OAuth, and this could be useful to make logging in your sites less painful, and that was the main reason why I was has written this class. Anyway, I'm just mentioning it here because it was an article published this month, and this sort of tutorial of the class, and also to encourage other developers of other classes well to write their tutorials and flag them as featured, so me, the moderator of the site, see that it fit and the requirement of being useful for the whole audience of the site, and you get more exposure, you get your article in the feed of the blog of the site, which reaches much more users than just your own class users. Michael, have you worked with OAuth in your applications? I suppose you did, but I was wondering.
Yeah, I have done some OAuth, and I've always used some existing library, Facebook. I just used the standard Facebook PHP library to do stuff. I had done, there was a Grails library, Grails plugin in that ecosystem that implemented OAuth for standard OAuth, and it had some hooks to connect to Facebook and Google and Yahoo and a couple others, Twitter and a couple others, through their standard OAuth stuff. But I haven't done much on my own. I looked at it a couple times, but it's not worth my time to try to hack something together just for something when there's existing libraries already. I just don't like digging that deep if I don't have to. If I have to, right, I have to.
Yeah, when there are some libraries to access certain APIs and do the auth authentication, that is helpful. But for some APIs, some that require OAuth authentication, either there is not the code to do it, or it is not very easy to do, and it becomes a bit painful because you have to learn all the endpoints, the URLs, and configure them in your code. And in the case of OAuth 1, you need to sign the parameters with certain secret keys that you obtain from the site you want to access for your application, and it is quite painful. And the idea of this class was to make it painless. For instance, if you want to access Yahoo, you would just configure server is Yahoo, and it will figure all the URLs and even certain options that configure the class to behave differently, because there are variants of behavior between different implementations of OAuth, and that is an headache. Well, if you did not work with many different OAuth servers, you may not know this yet, but if you get there and you get stuck because for some reason it doesn't work as you hoped, it's because there are differences of implementation, and then this class tries to solve it. Anyway, I just wanted to cover this superficially, not to get much into the actual article, just to mention that it is there, and the other authors that want to publish their articles about their classes, please go ahead, and the site will get you additional exposure, as I mentioned, if it is an article that can be useful to everybody else. And now moving on to one of our final sections, on which first we comment on the latest classes, objects published on the PHP classes brother site, the JS classes site. I'm trying to screen share it here. Let's see if it works, because here it is. Well, in the JS classes site, there are not many classes being published as in the PHP classes site, because it's still a site that is growing gradually. But there are a few classes interesting to comment about. Michael, which classes would you like to mention?
Well, I'll screen share a couple here. I'll take the top couple. Safari. Screen share. There we go. I share that window. Do you see that window shared? Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you can increase the font, it is always helpful.
Probably yeah.
You can't increase much, but.
So there's a couple here, and actually this one sort of relies on the HTTP class next to it, but both by the same author, JSGTV2. This is from, well, I lost it. Oh, there we go. Hope I'm saying this name right again. Juraj Puchki. This is poor American pronunciation skills. All the way from the Czech Republic. Hello. And this class will explicitly, not explicitly, but it will go out to the Google Translate API, do AJAX calls, and let you directly interface with that. And I had some code here pulled up just to give pulling up the sample code so you can see. You need to put your API key in the global space there, but then you create a new JSGTV2C detect and a translate. So you're making two new objects, actually three with supported languages. Give your API key there, your Google API key, and then there are some calls here. Things like get the supported languages, get the detected languages. I have a callback. So once the text is translated, then I'm going to replace that. Pretty straightforward. Nothing jumps out here as this is overly difficult code to understand or deal with. It looks pretty straightforward to let you directly use Google Translate stuff. So if you already have a page, you already got a system, and you want to do some live AJAX translation of things as people are typing stuff in, somebody's typed something in, and you can automatically translate it and get the AJAX back, this would be the tool to use.
Yeah, it practically, that example practically replicates the Google Translate page.
Right.
That can you can type some text and have this, yep. the site to detect the language that you typed it based on some heuristics.
But being able to take this and then customize it to your own site's needs, it's a pretty simple demo, but at the same time, Google's doing the hard work of doing the translation. You just need to send them a call through this class and get the results back.
Yeah.
The other, it's on my side. Do you want to do one now? Do you want to talk about one now?
Yes.
Why don't you take over?
No, go ahead. No, you can mention the other you wanted to mention.
Well, the other here, I just like the idea of it, but I think I am registered. The heck? Who wrote this code? I am registered, aren't I? I'm going to log in just to get this file. Don't look at my password. Eight black.
Oh, no, I've seen it.
Eight black dots, that's it. back here. Here's the README. This is an extend function or extend piece of functionality, create new objects and extend other objects. Not something that we have directly in JavaScript, but if you are interested in looking at a way to do this, I've seen some other frameworks and libraries that offer similar sorts of functionalities. You can study those, you could study this. But the idea of trying to bring that, concept of inheritance and superclassing and subclassing that we have in more things like Java and PHP and so, and trying to bring that into the JavaScript world is something that I think a lot of people still really want to do. They've spent a lot of time understanding OO in PHP, and to not have that same thing in JavaScript is obviously it's a problem for people, and they keep wanting to have it by whatever means necessary. So this class would give you a start in both using it, but to me a lot of these are more useful to see how other people solve or attack a problem and to use them as learning tools.
Right. I think everybody's missing the inheritance facilities that you have in the other languages. They also have like to have them in JavaScript. I think ECMAScript 6 already supports classes, similar to the way PHP and other languages support it. And so until ECMAScript 6 becomes widespread, I think solutions like this can be useful for those that want to implement inheritance somehow. And then moving on, I'm going also to mention briefly a couple of classes. So first one, named Busy Prime from Gabor Martini, already a regular contributor of the JS classes site from Hungary. And basically what it does is some calculations with numbers, integer numbers, to decompose them into prime numbers. And all sorts of operations that you can do with prime numbers, like decomposing a number and finding common multiples and common divisors. And this is a math application. There are some purposes for this kind of objects. So kudos to Gabor for providing this class. And next, I would also like to mention another class, an object, this time from Carl Holz, a regular contributor, also from the site. Basically, what it did is a parser for RSS feeds. And internally, it uses jQuery to send an AJAX request to retrieve an RSS feed from a remote server. And then it parses the feed and extracts the values of the items and the channel and exposes them through certain object variables. So if you want to develop an application that for some reason requires the access to RSS feeds, this could be a good start. So thank you, Carl, for yet another good contribution. And given this, now we're going to move on to one final section on which we commented the latest classes of the that were nominated with an innovation award. We already passed the end of the month, so this month nominees were already winners and nominees already announced, but we need to go back to mention the winners of August. They were they published the classes in August, and by the end of the month they were nominated. So they were voted during September, and now in October the winners were announced. Michael, which of these, let me see, nine classes would you like to mention?
Well, two jump out at me. I'm going to share my screen. First one, Amir Hosseinian, hope I'm saying that right, from Iran. Hello.
Can increase the font.
I did. Again.
Yeah.
Is that reasonable?
Well, maybe. Well, that's good enough.
Okay. But I actually lost the name of this class. Where's the name? That's his name. Securify. It's a small class, but it does something kind of. It's a middle ground between. I addressed this problem several years ago, and his approach is a little bit different than mine. If we look at his README, we will see it's just a basic class. You just bring it in, but what it does is it will take, if you give a password, it will just go and make it a bit more secure by replacing some things. If we see down here, you might get something like, it might uppercase something or lowercase something. It's going to replace some letters with symbols. It's going to replace, like the H in PHP, sometimes gets replaced with a 4 or a pound sign with leet speak. And the interesting thing to me about this is that it gives you a password that is still something that you can remember, but is far, far less likely to be hacked or compromised with normal attacks. Just today at WordCamp, somebody had brought up some slide and mentioned something about there was a recent password compromise, password, a leak of database password, or a password from a database, and about 6 million passwords, and something like 95 or 98% of them, of all those 6 million passwords, were one of 10,000 common words or phrases. Password,
yeah.
Hello, somebody's name, and so on. So if you can come up with something, even if it's kind of a common word or phrase, but run it through something like this, you could do it yourself. You and I probably, if you're watching this, you're probably sharp enough intellectually, not that other people aren't, but you, like, your brain thinks enough to say, well, let me replace some of these characters. A lot of ordinary people won't do that. They'll just say, well, my password is this, and to either be able to recommend a different password to somebody or generate passwords for people, one-time use passwords that are something that they could remember easier rather than just random strings, will help people to reuse more safe or more secure passwords. I just that was a long ramble, and I'm sorry, but that's use for it.
Yes, I think that's a very simple class that addresses the problem in a very unique way that I do not recall. There are many, many classes to generate passwords for users, but they are totally random. And in this case, there is even a parameter that can configure how much of the original text will be changed. So yeah. You can just change one letter. So your password that was very easy to guess, just changing one letter, it will become much harder, and that increases the security of the passwords, thus the name Securify of yep. the class. So despite it was a very simple class, what it does is quite simple. It was I think it was clever in terms of purpose, and probably it will be helpful for many sites to adopt.
I thought so, too. Okay. The other one that I wanted to call out briefly here is Mukhmad Iksan. Again, hope I'm saying that correctly, from Indonesia. Has a class, and I have not used this class, but I use Redmine. And this is a class, I think it's actually a set of classes that enable you to programmatically control the Redmine ticketing system from a command line. And being able to say, I want to create a new issue. If you've not used Redmine, you don't know what I'm talking about, probably. You're missing out. Redmine is a very, very powerful Ruby-based or Rails-based ticketing system. It's what I use for most of my projects these days. And to be able to have a command line interface to that, you know, this happens to be in PHP, but have a command line interface to it is really nice. So I appreciate what they did from a standpoint of it helps more people get exposure to Redmine. I'm just a big fan of that project. Interesting, too, that you need PHP 5.3 or greater, because it looks like there's probably some auto-loading going on. There's a loader. There's an entity. This console is a resource. This entry here is not just a single class. It's a pretty big set of functionality. I'm not going to say too much more, but if you're not using Redmine and you're looking for a ticketing system, look at Redmine. You may have to brush up on your Ruby or your Rails skills, or you may have to learn a bit if you want to host it yourself. There's a lot of Redmine hosting companies out there, too.
Well, that's quite interesting, because before this class, I have never heard of Redmine before, but once it was nominated, there was a guy in the Facebook that came and tell me, oh, this was the best class ever, because this is the best ticketing system, and I still did not have the time to look into it, but despite it was not written in PHP, it's probably a solution that many people should look at, including myself.
Redmine has a pretty good API. And when I'm using Eclipse or Zen Studio, which I don't all the time, but when I am, this is one of the things that's missing from PHP or from JetBrains products, is a connector, a project connector into Redmine. But when I was in Eclipse, you can use Mylyn, M-Y-L-Y-N, and that will give you a thing in your Eclipse to connect into ticketing systems. Well, there was one for Redmine. So you could just be in your Eclipse and say, what are my tickets? Let me grab a ticket. Let me update the ticket. Let me commit code against this ticket. And you could do it all from Eclipse. You could do it against some other Jira and some other ticketing systems as well, Fogbugs, I think. But to be able to do that against Redmine speaks pretty highly about the level of polish in its API that you could do that much. Yeah. Anyway, enough about Redmine and all that. Thank you very much for your class contribution. You're helping spread the joy of Redmine around.
Yeah, and next time people will also switch to Ruby instead of PHP. Yeah. No, just kidding. Well, now with this API, you don't need that. Well, anyway, moving on with the nominations, I would like to also mention a couple of classes. One, which was actually the winner of this month from Aziz Hussein. It says that he's from the United States, although his name suggests he's from some Middle East country. Anyway, the class here, multi-threaded MySQL backup and restore, is apparently yet another MySQL backup script that generates all those SQL statements too that you can execute later to restore the database. But this takes a different approach, which is to generate the backup of each table in parallel using fork processes that can run run the MySQL dump, but just for one table at a time. I'm not sure if this would be safe enough to use in a production database, because different tables may be being changed at the same time, and some tables may be backed up before and after. MySQL dump has a parameter that makes one database backup sort of integral, in the sense that it start a transaction to encapsulate the backup process from any changes that are done afterwards. But when you run several copies of MySQL dump in parallel, I don't know if this can be guaranteed. Anyway, it seems to be a different approach, as it is taking the backup of the database many tables at the same time. If you have multiple CPUs in your database server, probably it will take advantage of that. And it is a different approach, and for that it was nominated. So thank you, Aziz, for your contribution. Now moving on to one last nomination by Ihor Komin from Ukraine. He's already a regular contributor of the site, and this time he created a class that apparently it's not a big deal, because it just converts dates between a decimal string made just of digits to English words. The difference here is that it supports a range of years that can be in the billions. And this is not usual. Usually, PHP date manipulation functions work with the representation that is restricted to year starting 1970, and restricted to a way to manipulate dates. But this class uses its own code to manipulate the date, convert the date, and spell it in English words, and does not have that limitation. So that is why this class was nominated. So kudos to Ihor for his contribution. And with this, conclude this podcast. It was quite long, but I personally I have enjoyed it a lot. With this time, with this though, the always welcome Michael Kimsel.
Oh, stop! You're making me blush.
So there is only one Michael Kimsel.
Are two. I keep telling you.
It's your son, I know.
But one's my uncle. One's my uncle, and he's never—he's just not online. So
he doesn't do PHP.
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. Yeah.
Well, to finish the podcast, I think it probably will be interesting to mention something about your event, IndieConf, that you organize this time. It's just about a few days for people to sign in and join 13, your event. But I think
12 days. Yeah, 12 days, yes. Should I sing a song about it?
Well, if that explains why it would be interesting for PHP developers listening to the podcast to attend, that would be helpful.
Well, I appreciate the moment of silence here. IndieConf, if you haven't been, are you looking at me? Are you looking at me? You know what? Am I being recorded right now?
Yes, the world is looking at you.
Well, no, I don't know if they're pulling up my, if they're seeing my screen or your screen. I'll hope they're seeing my screen. IndieConf. Talked about on JS Classes, thank you very much. But this is a conference specifically for people who are web freelancers, independent creatives. If you're a graphic designer, if you are a developer, if you're somebody in between, maybe kind of an independent project manager, social media marketer, blogger, writer. If you make your money by working on the web in some sort of a creative or technical fashion, you probably belong here. If you're working for yourself or maybe working in a small company, 2, 3, 4 people, small game studio maybe, this is all about the soft side, the business skills, the personal side of working for yourself. May have a couple of code sessions, but it's you know, you can get code at 50 other conferences. There's not going to be that many conferences you go to where it's entirely devoted to people to learning about how to work for yourself, how to price your services, bootstrap yourself, that sort of thing. And I was going to mention at our WordCamp, I went to WordCamp in Raleigh here. It's all a WordPress thing, but they have 3 sessions that were all about working for yourself. Freelance like a rock star, and how to make a living being a WordPress person, and how to price yourself, and how to charge what you're worth, and how to get that, and all that stuff. There were explicitly those 3 sessions. I think there was another one, but 3 sessions out of 24, 25 or so that they had. They were pretty well attended. So there's certainly a need out there for that kind of information, the desire for that. So, or it could have just been that the other sessions were extremely, really boring, and everybody came to those. But I don't think so. There was some other good WordPress stuff there. So if you know somebody that is a freelancer, if you want yourself, I realize not everybody can come to Raleigh, but tell you what, if you're coming from out of the country, as long as you can get here, you come in. You're my guest, please. Yeah. If you're gonna come all the way over from Europe or South America, Manuel, come on, come up from Brazil.
I'm trying to gather some money. I think I still make it in time for the event.
I think you've got 12 days. I think you can make it.
Just to conclude, how many days? How much to do?
Oh yes, I'm never really good at. It's November 17th. It's about 10 days from now, 12 days from now.
Just one day, the event.
It's one day. It's all day. Start at 8 in the morning, actually 9. We're going to 7 at night. We got networking. It's an all-day Saturday event. If you come in, I'll hang out with you Friday if you want to. I'll hang out with you Sunday. We may have a mini thing on Sunday, just grab some coffee or something informally. But this is our third one, and it has been pretty well attended in the past, and we're hoping to increase that this year. So come on out, IndieConf.com. Thank you very much, Manuel.
Well, that was a great way to conclude this podcast. Michael, as usual, thank you for coming again. I hope you can come in the future, because your insights are always enrich the podcast.
I hope
you can come.
You're saying I'm fat?
No, I said rich, not fat.
Okay.
Well, on that note, that's all for now. Bye.